I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ever wonder what it takes to go from being an amateur to professional in sport? Welcome to An Athlete's Blueprint, the podcast that uncovers the secrets of champions, to let you know what it really takes to win a medal or break a record. Speaking to players and coaches, I capture insights from the training ground to the world stage, having the conversations normally kept behind closed doors. An Athlete's Blueprint is the podcast for sports enthusiasts starting out or those chasing the next podium. Get ready to rethink what you know about competing. Let's meet Josh Hill, a British champion dressage rider. In this episode, we cover how to get started in dressage, what it's like to compete at a dressage competition, the lack of diversity within the equestrian industry, the Emile Faure Foundation, and why Josh started a clothing brand for male riders. Please listen to this amazing conversation with Josh.
Tell me why dressage and how you got into it.
I didn't start riding until I was about 7 or 8 years old. I grew up around horses. My mum rode, my nan rode. So there's a huge background with horses throughout my family. But at a real young age, didn't show any interest. And then where we moved to, I then lived next door to like two little Shetlands. And basically, pretty much got thrown on them and sort of slowly fell in love with the horses at that point. And then when I was 9 years old, Santa bought me a pony that ended up in my back garden with tinsel wrapped around it. So at that time, obviously, I thought Santa had put a pony in my back garden, which was pretty amazing. And then, yeah, just continued riding. And when I was 13 years old, Mum used to do a bit of dealing, which is where we buy horses, produce them, then sell them, and hopefully try and make some money in that period. We came across this one pony, and he basically was extremely talented with dressage. It just naturally was talented. And before that, as a guy, dressage probably isn't what you'd expect a guy to be into. More the show jumping, the racing, the eventing, more adrenaline type of discipline, really. Whereas when I rode him and he was found the dressage so easy, it just made me fall in love with it. And then since then, I've never looked back.
And, you know, what were some of those early lessons or experiences with the horses like, or the pony that you got for Christmas?
Yeah. To be honest, a lot of bad memories of falling off, to be honest. It is one of those sports that's a real leveler. Especially when you're learning, you would fall off so many times. It hurts a lot more now than it did back then. But yeah, a lot of falling off. But I had some amazing memories on that pony. So the pony that Santa bought me wasn't dressage specific. I ended up doing a lot of showing on her. And I won up at Royal Windsor, so in the Queen's, well, now King's, but the Queen at the time, back garden, and won two competitions there, qualifying for the Royal International Horse Show at Hixted, which is like a top show to like qualify for. So those memories for me really stand out as such incredible moments for me.
Can you describe how exciting or scary it is to be competing in your early in your dressage career?
I think I was very lucky that initially when I was younger, I was so oblivious to really what was going on, and probably quite a laid back guy type of like stereotype really, that I was fortunate that I didn't really get nervous at all when I was competing. What I found extremely hard was afterwards, if it hadn't gone well, I'd get very angry. Obviously, a huge thing with horses is you're reliant on an animal. An animal has a mind of its own. So you could prepare to the best of your ability and think, oh, I've got this in the bag, and then all of a sudden the horse could change its mind and you're screwed basically. So when I was younger, that was very hard to understand, and a lot of emotion would run through me that I struggled as a young lad to like process. So it would cause a lot of family tension, definitely. As with horses, it really is a team sport. I was extremely reliant on my mum taking me to all the shows, paying for everything. So they're putting a lot of money into what I'm doing. So if I've not done well, there's frustration on her part. There's frustration all around. I'm frustrated. So it would cause a lot of tension between me and my mum at that age. But then when it goes well, it's the best feeling in the world. When it all comes together in a day, there is nothing better than that, I think, because of the unpredictability with horses. When it does go well, you really have to celebrate it and make the most of it.
When you were frustrated, how did you overcome that? Did you practice more, or what would you do?
Really, you almost have to start again. You almost have to completely forget about it. And it was never about practicing more. I guess the difference with horses, there's a limit to how much you can practice, because I think at that time I had the one horse. There's only a certain amount of times I could ride that one horse, which would be 4, 5, 6 times a week. So it was never about practicing more. It was almost forgetting it happened and believing in what you're doing. So I think that is probably one of the biggest things with horses, is having faith in what you're doing and sticking to a plan. It's maybe a bit different when you're in a team sport or an individual sport or something where you personally can adapt and change things for yourself. When you're riding a horse, there's only so much you can try and adapt or try and do differently, so it's quite limited. So it really is sort of sticking to what you know and what you're doing. So I think it's one of those, you have to be very open-minded, but have to have a lot of confidence in what you're doing. And I was very lucky at that age to have my mum, who was very knowledgeable, and trainers around me that had vast amount of experience and knowledge from the industry that could sort of point me in the right direction and say, no, this is right. Or if on the occasion it was down to me that I did make a mistake, I warmed up for too long, or I didn't warm up for long enough, that they could hold me accountable for it.
Absolutely. And that accountability, how did you deal with that pressure?
Looking back now, not very well. at the time, you don't know any different, do you? I was lucky enough to get on when I started choosing dressage is what I wanted to do. I was on a national training program that had sports psychology on it. So maybe at 14, 15, I had, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 sessions of sports psychology. Obviously, the mind is something that we talk about a lot more than, say, 10 years ago. But looking back, I wish I had more of a help when it came to the psychology and the mind back when I was performing. Because throughout my career, as I got older, the mental side of things was what let me down the most, because I wasn't able to deal with the pressure enough.
That's a really honest and frank answer, thank you. In today's world with dressage, is there any help available?
I think it's talked about more and more. Is there specific help? I'm sure there is if you look into it. I'm sure there's probably equestrian psychologists out there and everything. And I obviously it's helpful that people talk more openly about mental health and their struggles. But also, it's a hard industry. And that's not just dressage, that's the whole equestrian industry. It's a lifestyle. There is a lot of financial pressure, dealing with numerous different problems that may occur throughout a day with horses. It's a tough, tough, tough place to be in. But yeah, I've looked at externally for help when it comes to therapy. And yeah, so I've been going through therapy for the last 18 months, 2 years. And the horses was an amazing thing for me to be part of growing up and an incredible experience.
I've also, you know, gone to therapy and dealt with things as well. So I think that's a really cool thing to stress to people, that it is a lifestyle. And because of that, there are pros and cons, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an amazing thing to be part of and do. And I don't ever think want people to think I'm putting the sport down. I'm not. I'm just saying there's got to be a balance for you, your mind, your body. And it's very difficult to put balance into something when you're growing into a sport or turning that sport into your job, which I did as well, because all you do is say yes because you want opportunities. There's no balance with everything. And then in the end, something has to give. And for me, I suffered from chronic fatigue. So my body pretty much gave up on me. Wow. I'm no doctor by any means, but my perception on chronic fatigue, and I've been around people that have had it too, is because your body has had so much stress mentally and you've not been able to deal with it, that your body goes into shutdown. That's my opinion and that's my thought process on it. I know obviously there's numerous studies and what have you, but looking back, I was in such a bad place mentally that my body shut down on me. Because it was its only way of taking care of itself, because that's what the body tries to do, is tries to look after itself. And I was abusing it. So yeah, I've experienced a lot of things like that that have taught me a lot, made me a better person now. But yeah, it is a huge, huge, huge learning curve.
I think, yeah, I'm kind of gobsmacked, really. Thank you. In regards to that, then, being a better person, what does that look like today?
That I put myself first. And I'm a huge believer in that if you don't love yourself, you can't love someone else. Like, it's my job to take care of myself. It's not my job to take care of everyone else. I was so preoccupied by looking after other people, I would neglect myself. I think a lot of people are like that nowadays. I'm not afraid to make decisions that may upset other people that are for my own good. And again, we live in a world that is so about social media. I'm lucky to have a big social media following, but also that has been so detrimental to my mental health as well. So I'm also very, very lucky that I'm in a point in my life that I don't feel that I need to post on social media, that I don't really care what people's opinions are of me, other than someone that I'd go to advice for. If I can't go to you for advice, I won't listen to your criticism.
I love that. I love that. And talking about advice then, you know, with your current situation sort of in and around the sport, how do you feel when you go to a dressage competition as a spectator or to take part?
So for me now, I've not competed in maybe the last 18 months. I've had time away from the sport. I've taken a break because it was just something I needed to do. I have been my career for 10 years. I left school when I was 16. And rode professionally till I was 26. And prior to that, it was a hobby. So I've been doing it all my life and I just needed some time away, which I think is a blessing in disguise, to be honest. And I think sometimes it's not a bad thing to do just in life, is just to have a recharge, go away from something and come back to it. But now going to an event, and especially when I'm going to some of these big events now, I just want to be there. I want to be competing. It fuels that adrenaline in me, that competitive edge. And it was very funny. It's probably in the last 4 months for my therapist, I felt like in my life something was missing, and it was the competition. Throughout my whole life, I've competed almost every weekend, and then I'm not. And then I was like, there's something I feel like I'm missing, and it's because I was so used to competing. So when I'm not competing anymore, it feels like there's a huge gap in my life. So for me, that's the big thing that I miss, is the competing. Not necessarily the training. Maybe I wasn't a fan of the training, but the competing is where I really, really got my sort of, I guess, kick that I loved. So I definitely at this moment in time, when I'm going to these big events, it's what I'm missing hugely.
I love that, that through, you know, talking to somebody professionally, you've rediscovered that burning fire to get back to it. So, you know, what's it really like to be in a dressage competition? Like what actually happens, you know, from the start of the day to the end of the day?
Yeah, fine. So normally you'll get, there's different sections, different classes. So you'll get your time allocated before. I was always, no matter what horse I was on, I would allow myself 25 minutes to get on before, to be in the warm-up arena, 25 minutes before I was due to go in. So in that 25 minutes, I would normally walk the horse as a warm-up for 10 minutes. So in that time, I'm just literally getting in my zone. So a lot of that is me feeling how the horse feels today. How is it feeling in his body? Is it tight? Is it feel it soft? Is it working over its back? All those things are going through my mind. And then for me, it's just slowly getting into my zone, just cutting out everyone around me, unless they're in my team. A lot of people may think that I'm rude in the warm-up because I wouldn't acknowledge them. But for me, I just need to be so focused on what I'm doing. And then from that period onwards, I would then have 15 minutes left. I'd then have sort of a 5-minute walk, trot, canter, sort of picking them up, warming them up, getting them through, working over the body, again, assessing the horse. Another little walk break. And then I pick them up and start preparing them for whatever level they're competing at. And then sort of 2-3 minutes before I'm due to go down and enter the arena for my test, boots will come off that I've been wearing for the horse's protection. And then I'll be going into that arena. And the thing for me in that arena, depending on the horse, is it might be on a spooky horse. So I might need to get to certain points around the arena on both reins to make sure that they are not going to be naughty. Or I might have to really wake them up again because they're about to go get down that center line. Judge is ready. She'll ring the bell or horn on a car or some sort of symbol to say start. And then you get 60 seconds to get down that center line to start your test. And that is the sort of principle and structure that I'd use. Throughout that, my mind the whole time is focusing on how that horse is feeling. What I'll be asking the horses questions, and I want to see what answers they're giving to me. And depending on the answers is then how I adapt throughout that warm-up session, because I basically want that horse to make all of its mistakes in the warm-up arena that I can correct them. So when I go down that center line, they're 100% listening and we're on the exact same wavelength for what we're expecting from each other. And then the test is easy. You win or lose it in a warm-up, in my opinion, sorry.
In these competitions, what are judges scoring you on?
Okay, so you'll have specific movements from the test, so each test is different. You have certain levels, and then you have, say, at that level, you have 10 tests within that level. Then you go up a level, and they might have 8 tests within that level. And the different levels the higher you go up, the harder the levels are, the harder the movements, the harder the tests are. So within these tests, you probably have 17 movements that the judge is watching you. So they'll have a test sheet in front of them with these exact movements that you'll be doing. And within that, they're looking for you to do them as accurately as possible. So if you're riding a certain size circle, they want it to be as bang on accurate. And the way of going the horse and the presentation, how does the horse and rider look? We almost describe it as one. You want the horse and rider to look as one. So it's very harmonious, that overall picture, just really easy on the eye. And that is what comes into their mind. And then they'll give you a mark out of 10. So 10 being the best and 0 being awful and non-existent probably. So yeah, that is how they'll judge it. And throughout the test, for every movement you do, you'll get a mark. And then at the end, we have something we call the collectives. And in that, we've got a breakdown of sort of, they'll give a mark for the overall riding ability of the rider. Then you've got 3 other collective marks that the judge will give you. And then what happens after is you'll get a percentage overall of that test. The highest percentage within that class wins.
Beautiful. And you were describing the pageantry of it all. In terms of the, you know, what you need to wear and how you tailor your outfit to match with your horse and things like that, how does that work?
Yeah, so there's certain requirements that you have to be like hit in.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Guards to what you're wearing. Like, it's very, very strict. Dressages are very classical. We are in what, a suit and tie, breeches, leather boots. The horse is in certain tack that it has to be wearing, so it's in a bridle and saddle. It has to be certain colours. Everything has to be quite plain. For the jacket, really, it's navy and black. You don't really see much else in dressage, so it's very, very classical and very, very prim and proper, I guess you could say.
That's really helpful. That's really good to know. And I think that somebody who's interested in taking up that sport, I guess they would already know what it's about. But I think just having that solidified is really powerful. So thank you. And in terms of, you know, having a bond with your horse, how does that work?
It's a real strange one. It's probably very hard to put into words because I've had maybe one or two horses that I've ridden where it just feels different. Just there's some sort of connection that you have with that horse that you just cannot describe. It's very, very weird. Horses are very, very intelligent animals. Very intelligent. They are so quick to pick up an emotion. And I always used to say to people, you have to ride emotionless because they know, they do, they can pick it up. If you're stressed or whatever, they'll be naughty. It's a really, really weird thing and concept to explain. But there are just some horses that you build a relationship with that you feel like you're as one with the horse when you're riding
them. I love that. And it's almost, I don't know how to describe it myself, but it's a real sort of like oneness, isn't it? It's a bit of yin and yang. Like, you need to be in the same wavelength otherwise.
100%. I read this recently about how with animals, so with dogs, right? Why do people like hugging their dogs? And it's because we take the energy from the dog. So with grounding, the dog is always connected to the earth. And when we're stroking them, we're getting the energy that they sort of are consistently getting off the earth. And I think it's the same premise with horses as well. You're just getting, I'm a huge sort of spiritual person. that I really believe in, like the aura and energy that animals can give you. I think it's shown with how animals are involved in therapy, how beneficial they can be. But you just, with some horses, there's just an energy and aura, a connection that you have with them that you just can't explain in words.
I think that's a really beautiful way of putting it. And if somebody is, this is sort of changing subjects a little bit. If somebody is looking for a dressage horse, what are the characteristics or breeds that you kind of look for?
You know what? I previously, sort of 5-6 years ago, I would have given you a specific type of horse and named some breeds that you can. Do you know what? I think the best thing now is any horse can do dressage. And what makes a very, very good rider is being able to make an average horse go better than it's capable of. Of course, I could name you some certain breeds that are capable of being some of the top Grand Prix horses, but every horse is capable of doing dressage. And I think it's amazing the more breeds and different type of horse that you have doing dressage. It's just only good for the sport.
I love that. It makes it accessible to all then.
100%. And I think that's such a huge thing with horses in general, that it needs to be accessible for everyone. And it's not. In my opinion,
what's the physicality involved in actually doing a dressage routine?
The best way to answer this would be, with dressage, there is so much that you're doing, but you don't want anyone to notice what you're doing. It's almost the best type of sport I can compare it to is ballet dancing. Ballet looks so effortless, but they are having to use so many muscles to sort of hold themselves in the positions that they're dancing. And it's the same with a dressage rider. You have to be physically strong, but you're not riding strong. You're riding very, very soft. You have to be able to be relaxed and as one with the horse, but strong within that relaxed position. You don't want to look tense when you're on a horse. You want to be relaxed and moving with the horse. So yeah, you would say like core muscles is a huge, huge part of it. Huge, huge, huge part of it. Our hip muscles, again, like our hip flexors need to be very strong. You've got to have a strong lower back, and you've just got to have good coordination really as well.
Thank you. And do you still do the exercises that you used to when you were riding competitively?
I've got a huge interest in the gym. It's my hobby. It's always been a huge part of my life. And as the riding has become less, the gym has become more. And I've probably got to the point in my life now where the way I train will be the best type of training for me to ride, which is strange when I'm not riding. But I've focused a lot on the posterior chain recently with my trainer, my PT and coach. And my posture over the last 6 months has dramatically changed for the better. Whereas when I was riding and it was all about how good is your posture, my posture used to let me down. That's because I'm training the correct muscles off the horse. Yeah. When you're overdoing something and overusing certain muscles, it's not a good thing.
It's a bit of a weird one, but what is the diet of a dressage rider? Like, what do you need to eat in order to stay in good condition?
You'll have many arguments. I don't think personally fitness is taken seriously enough in dressage or horse riding in general. Very different with racing because there have to be certain weights, but within horse riding, you wouldn't think or look at and presume most riders are physically fit. So nutrition, diet, most riders would be commonly known to be eating at a burger van while they're away at a competition. In my opinion, they should be taking care of themselves more. I'm a huge advocate for that, because when people say, oh, you don't need to be physically fit to ride horses, okay. But by being physically fit, you're going to think better. You'll think more clearly. You'll make better decisions. So even if you don't think from a physical point of view, you need to be fit, your mind will improve by being physically fit.
And I guess it's about being in control of your of your actions and feeling confident about your, you know, feeling confident about where you want to go with the horse and the actions you want to take. You know, names in the industry. Who do you look up to?
It's funny. A huge person I looked up to, and nothing to do with horses whatsoever, would be Dennis Rodman. I absolutely love Dennis Rodman. His character, he's different. He's so unique. He was so flamboyant. He was 100% who he was. And for a long time, I wasn't able to be myself because I felt I had to be someone to fit in. So for me, he's just a huge inspiration to me in that sense of who he is as a character. And then Johnny Wilkinson, again, an absolute hero of mine growing up too. When it came to riding, I never really had one, a role model that I looked up to. And that's partly because of the industry that I was in. I was state educated. I didn't feel like I could relate to anyone.
I think that's a really poignant thing that we're touching on here, actually, because the background that riders come from is probably less diverse than people realise. So
100%.
Yeah. Do you want to sort of just touch on...
Of course. I think it'll be very easy for me to sit here and say that a lot of the riders come from wealthy backgrounds. And that probably is correct. A lot of them do. I remember when I was doing some of the sort of the national training squads when I was younger, I was the only one that wasn't sort of privately educated. So I was very lucky and had a very, very supportive family who put a lot of finances into it. There's no denying that whatsoever. But in comparison to what I grew up around, it was two different worlds. I was going to a shit state school. Sorry for swearing. It was terrible. A terrible state school. And then I was going to dressage competitions where there is so much money that I'd never sort of seen before. The horse industry, there is a lot of money in it. So you're catering to one type of person, someone that can afford to spend that amount of money on horses. We have riding schools, which are fantastic because they offer people the opportunity to be around horses. But again, there's not enough funding for them. Like a lot of things in society, the bottom of the pile doesn't get looked after. And that's the same with riding schools. They don't get enough support that they need. And the diversity as well. I've personally done a lot and still do with Ride Out Racism. But there's...
Why do you think it seems difficult to get into or try?
I think the stereotype...
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Type definitely plays a huge part. The finances and the accessibility of the sport too. I think those are three key components of the sport that make it hugely different. Because if you look maybe to, say, European countries like Spain and Portugal, they're known as horse nations. Like you're more likely to ride than not to ride. Or America, you think of Texas. In Texas, you're not seen to be a man until you've ridden a horse. Whereas over here, the culture is very different.
This sounds weird to say, but are there things like scholarships or bursaries? Is there any way for someone either lower income or diverse background to get involved?
So I will name drop a charity, and it's called the Emile Faure Foundation, and they work with kids from inner cities that are maybe going through difficult times with family or school or whatever, and they sort of put them into riding schools and get them involved with horses. And there's some amazing stories, as you can imagine, that come out where people then go on to work with horses. That is one thing that is very good, is that you can go off to sort of colleges and get your qualifications, and there are always jobs with looking after horses. So you can work your way up. It's very hard than maybe starting younger and having the support of your family, but you can work your way up as a sort of working pupil and start then get onto riding and build your career. It is possible. It is very hard, but it is possible. But there are some amazing charities that do help bring people from different backgrounds into the sport. And like I say, you've got another charity that I mentioned, Ride Out Racism, which is fantastic again, because you've got some amazing people behind the scenes sort of breaking down barriers that need to be.
See, I find that so exciting. You know, who are some of the trailblazers that they would look to within the horse racing or horse sort of equestrian scene?
It'd be very hard for me to name drop right now and be like, this is a specific person, because I might not necessarily know their background to a T. But I can name a story from a foundation where it's the most incredible story I've heard. And it was about a young lad who hadn't spoken in 3 years. And he was taken to a day that the Emil Ferrer Foundation had organised at a riding school. And they all ran the horses. They all got to have a sit on the horse. And he was walking around, and the instructor there was like, are you enjoying this? And he nodded his head. And they were like, would you like to trot? And again, he nodded his head. And she turned and said, you need to say yes if you'd like to trot. And that was his first word he said in 3 years. And continuing his riding lessons got him back talking and communicating. Whereas he'd done every bit of therapy and everything you can ever imagine in the previous 3 years that his parents tried to sort of resolve that issue and had zero luck. But horses in one lesson managed to get him talking, which just shows what amazing creatures they are and why it is so important people that need the help are able to access horses.
That's insane. And that's incredibly beautiful. And I think, you know, you've kind of touched on it many times whilst we're speaking, but animals have this, you know, indescribable effect on people. Mm. And, you know, we get caught up in the lifestyle and the, you know, the money and all of those things. Mm. If you boil it down, it's like an unbreakable bond.
100%. It's our ancestral way of living that we are so far away from now. No, like I would put sort of animals under the bracket of nature. If you're having a shit day, you go out for a walk in the forest, you're going to feel a lot better. If you're walking through a town, you're not going to feel as good as you are for walking through a forest. And I think that's where we get lost in the world that we now live in, from our roots and what actually is healthy for us as people.
Completely agree. What does the future look like for you?
There's a lot I feel like I offer now. I hate to use the term role model, but as an example, maybe for a lad like myself to be in the equestrian industry and not be embarrassed, because there's so much stigma around males that ride, and the stereotypes as well, that it's okay to be different and still ride. You don't have to be a fake person. So I love doing the podcast. I love doing live talks and highlighting issues and being an example that you can be different. I've got face tattoos, for God's sake. So I never thought my life would take me to this position where I'm doing more by being off a horse than on a horse. But by being off the horse and talking about it, I'm doing more good for everyone else than I am currently being on it. So I'll get back on a horse one day, and I've still got huge ambitions. I'd still love to go to the Olympics. If I'm talented enough, we'll see. Who knows? You're going to need a lot of luck on that way. But at this moment in time, life has taken me down a very different path that I'm sort of fully on board of.
I love that. Stereotypes and things like that. Mm. Can you just describe what that was like and how people shouldn't be afraid of that?
Yeah, I think one thing that I actually haven't touched on about the equestrian industry that is incredible, no matter your sexuality, you're accepted. It's fantastic. Whatever your sexual interests are, again, it's the most accepting industry that I've ever grown up in, and was amazing for me to grow up in. That's in that environment. But being a horse rider in secondary school, you were just constantly thrown things for riding horses, just things that I don't even want to repeat because it's just not nice and disgusting, and things used in a detrimental way that shouldn't be as a young kid. They don't actually understand the consequences of. So it made you so sort of self-conscious about your sport that I loved and I enjoyed. I was almost pushed away from because of the bullying from all the different names under the sun and whatever. Mm. And that is it. I think, unfortunately, if you do something different, especially during sort of secondary school,
yeah,
then that's the issue. Yeah. Like, it's when you're doing things that are different. If you played rugby and football and was the typical guy, then you have no issue. But if you do something different, and I was different, I'm a very different person. I'm not what you would maybe say, and people will look at me and probably will never understand me as a person, and that's fine. But I am well and truly myself. But you always try to almost be, I think school and education in my eyes, sorry, is all about putting everyone under one bracket in one box. And I was, yeah, and putting your limitations in there is what you can and can't do. And I'm just so anti that. I think you should be the best version of self, whoever that is.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Thank you. You've become the Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, literally.
One more thing, I promise, just one more thing. And I think this is really cool, actually. You started a clothing brand, right?
Yes.
How does the clothes that you created help other riders?
So again, the clothing that we created was for male riders, as there's not a lot of representation for male riders in the industry. And it was to make clothing for guys that is fashionable, trendy, stylish, that they can ride in. So throughout my childhood, I had the embarrassment of all these awful riding clothes I had to wear. And if I saw my friends, I couldn't think of anything worse. I wanted the guys to be able to go into a barber shop in their riding gear and look cool and not feel insecure. And I believe we did that. And the prime example for me is that when I was riding properly and I was riding in my own clothing brand, I'd have a hair appointment. All I'd have to do was put my trainers on instead of my riding boots. And I would walk into the shop with absolute confidence and not a care in the world. Whereas to this day, I would not walk in my old riding gear because I'd be so worried about people's perception of how I looked and everything like that. So I think for me, the proof in the pudding was I believed in the product and I believed in what we were doing. And that's all that. And the feedback we had as well was incredible. So
what is the ratio, like, you know, man to woman within the sport?
It's funny, probably at the professional level, It's probably 50-50.
Interesting.
At the amateur side of things, it's maybe about 1,000 to 1. Woman to guy. You would not see a man really do the sport as a hobby, but you would see it do it as a profession. And I have a huge belief that if you were going to do it as a hobby during secondary school, with the amount of crap you got, you'd quit. If you knew you were good at it, you'd persevere and you'd deal with it. And that's why I believe there's a lot of top riders that are men, and it's very, very balanced, 50-50, but the bottom end of the sport is so female dominated.
That's, yeah, no, I think you've summed it up really beautifully there, so thank you. I think it definitely wasn't necessarily the conversation I thought we'd have, but it's been way better.
Thank you for listening to this episode of An Athlete's Blueprint. The authentic stories shared in this podcast aren't for everybody. They were just for you, a true sports enthusiast. Whether you're going into your next practice session or at the starting line for the finals, take the winner's insight from the athletes and the coaches you heard from today. Remember, this advice is only available on an Athlete's Blueprint podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.